second opinion. I don't believe that it's true.
Lying awake in my hospital room, the song starts. And almost everyone can identify with the tremendous difficulty of getting a good night's sleep while hospitalized. What if you could be in the hospital, but at home, in your own bed? I'm Emily Auerbach, and this is University of the Air. Today, we focus on a relatively new program at UW Health, the Hospital at Home program. What do studies reveal about dangers from hospitalization, such as infections, muscular weakness, and depression? What are the successes and challenges of this pilot program? Joining me are two guests. Mandy McGowan, RN, is the Director of Home-Based Care Programs for UW Health, and Joshua Shapiro, MD, is the Medical Director of UW Health's Hospital at Home program. Welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is an exciting new program, but maybe it's not as new as it seems in terms of looking at what's been done around the world and in other parts of the country. Mandy, you oversee sort of many different hospital at home type programs or home based programs where there's some kind of hospital care. Can you talk about that and how this program fits into it?
Yes. We often like to talk about what our hospital at home program is and what it isn't, because it's important to understand the different levels of care that are available at home. So most people are familiar with what I would consider traditional home health. So when you have folks like a registered nurse or a physical therapist come into your home a couple of times a week, provide services, that's what we consider traditional home health. And then as patients have more needs in the home, higher levels of care are required. So when you start having physicians come to the home, that is even higher acuity for the care that's in the home. And the highest acuity is this program that we're talking about today, where we're doing true acute inpatient care that is typically provided in a hospital building, but we're bringing that entire care to a patient's home. So it's not home health, it's not rehabilitation at home, it's true acute inpatient care in the patient's home.
And it's not hospice care.
It is not hospice either. Care either, correct.
And is it always just in a individual's home as opposed to in an assisted living, residential kind of facility or nursing home?
It can be provided in an assisted living facility, provided that the group that's taking care of the patient there is in agreement to partner on the care. It is not available in a skilled nursing facility or nursing home because that is a different level of care. So again, the patients who are receiving care in this type of a program are inpatients. So they've gone through the process of being evaluated by a physician in the ER and are determined that they really need to be served at the level of acute care in the building. But what we're offering is that acute care can happen in their home instead.
If you put in the phrase hospital at home, it may pull up something about Johns Hopkins or some other program. Can you talk about how the UW's program relates to that?
Absolutely. So we are very grateful for the research that's been done since the mid-1990s, starting with Johns Hopkins and moving to Mount Sinai and Brigham Women's and Children's Hospital. They have spent years researching this type of care and putting their findings out to share. And so this is a very collaborative model of care that we've learned from those folks that have been doing this for a long time and use what they've learned to help build our own program here at UW Health. And we continue to have a collaborative relationship with the leaders of programs all over the country, which has been incredibly beneficial. So when we have a question, I can reach out to my counterpart in Boston or North Carolina and ask questions and see how they've accomplished things.
Okay, great. Now, you direct the home-based care programs kind of overall, and with a nursing background, Joshua Shapiro is the medical director of the hospital at home program. Can you talk to us a bit about what got you into this program from your
Sure.
earlier work in internal medicine?
Yeah, so I'm a general internal medicine doc. I had been at the University of Wisconsin as a hospitalist, so that means a general internal medicine doctor who takes care of hospital-level patients. So I've been doing that for 6 or 7 years by the time I got involved in this. And my primary job before taking this on, and continues to be to some extent sometimes, is taking care of people when they're admitted to the hospital. So, you know, anything that comes in the door through the ER, whether it's somebody sick with a pneumonia, a skin infection, an organ that's not working the way that it should, or potentially a chronic disease that's gotten out of balance, if they need to be admitted to the hospital, it's somebody like me who then manages their care, helps navigate that hospitalization with them and their family, and try to make sure that we get them better and then have a successful plan to transition back into the outpatient setting. So historically, I'd been taking care of folks in the hospital, and the hospital is an incredibly stressful time for patients and their mm-hmm. families. Sometimes it's the worst day of their lives, right? They're maybe admitted with a new illness or a life-threatening illness that is sometimes caught them by surprise or that they weren't aware of.
And they sometimes have spent hours and hours in the ER first, so that yeah. getting admitted might mm-hmm. happen at 4 a.m. after you know, being in the waiting room and waiting for that, figuring out are they going to be admitted? Is there a bed?
Yes, almost always they've navigated the ER. Maybe they've navigated another urgent care and then the ER. Sometimes they've come to us as a transfer from a smaller hospital. Typically they've been through the ringer. So when I'm navigating a hospitalization with a patient and their family, not only are we managing their medical problem and their health and adjusting medications and monitoring things, but we're managing what I would maybe say is some of the collateral damage of all the stuff that's happened. Like
now, that's a strong expression, collateral damage. Tell me what you mean by that.
When hospitals are set up to be as safe as they possibly can be, we monitor people 24/7. We check in with vital signs 24/7, nursing checks, infusions running. Hospitals are capable of doing some of the most, technologically advanced care that we can provide in the United States. They're amazing places. Because of those things, they're incredibly active places all the time. It's a very challenging place to rest, incredibly hard to get a good night's sleep. Whether it's because of an infusion that's running all night long or vital sign checks or blood work that needs to be drawn at 3 or 4 a.m. Or the entire process of moving through the ER and into the hospital room, which has completely upended somebody's normal routine. And so maybe they haven't slept for a day or two. Meanwhile, we do everything we can in the hospital to make sure that it's a safe place. So sometimes we'll ask patients, don't get up without a nurse, please. We don't, you've got IVs running, you've got monitors across your chest. It's quite high risk to fall. Like, please wait for a nurse. And so that takes its toll as well. The physical body is not meant to lay in a hospital bed 80, 90% of the time. And so as I have been taking care of hospital patients, navigating these challenges in their health and these acute illnesses, also just trying to manage some of the things that come up throughout the hospitalization, sore backs, sore necks because they're not sleeping and the bed is incredibly uncomfortable, maybe insomnia, so maybe even sometimes using medications to treat both the back pain and the insomnia, then constipation because they're not moving their bodies mm-hmm. much, so giving another medicine for constipation. Occasionally even people getting hospital-acquired infections or blood clots or other hospital-acquired conditions. And so part of my job is not just to manage the acute illness, but to make sure that we're on our toes to look for and manage all these other things, the things that crop up during a hospitalization. It's incredibly hard on a patient.
So that you don't get worse. I mean, there are these horror stories of somebody who goes in for, something fairly minor, and it ends up escalating with a staph infection and this and that, and suddenly mm-hmm. you're on life support. So how big a risk is infection in the hospital? Because obviously, doctors are supposed to wash their hands, use sanitizer on their hands, and sure. COVID taught us a lot about the spread of infections. But how real a problem is it to come into the hospital and acquire something that you didn't have before?
In the United States, we've done an enormous amount of things to make hospitals safer. And the risk of acquiring an infection is relatively low. I would actually maybe talk a little bit more about some of the risks of not just infections, but muscle mass loss, mobility loss, functional strength loss. One thing we know is when people are admitted to us, many are older people with chronic diseases. Folks who are 65 years and older, when they're admitted to the hospital, within a week of hospitalization, they could lose up to 10% of their muscle mass. They oftentimes, even as much as 50% of the time, might come in completely independent and leave either with a disability or being dependent on somebody else for some cares. And that could mean discharging to a nursing home or maybe even living the rest of their life in a nursing home. The hospitalization can be a dramatic change to somebody's life. And unfortunately, we see that every day. You know, of course, we keep hospitals as safe as we possibly can. But the question I had is, what if we could take some of the hospital care or some of our patients that we care for and transition some of that back into the home where we can work on some of these things like activity, mobility, allowing people to eat the food that they eat, sleep in their own bed, be with their loved ones, be engaged with their family, all of those things.
I would think there would be a benefit to mental health as well, because if you are lying in bed in a hospital with your number on the outside and you're wearing a hospital gown that flaps open in the back and looking at a very sterile kind of room, that takes a toll on how you feel about things too, I assume.
Yeah, so whenever I'm working with a patient or their family to understand their medical problems and trying to ally with them to make it better, it's a relationship that requires a lot of trust. And so, you know, imagine the difference laying in a hospital room in a hospital gown with a medical team talking to you about your medical problems versus sitting in your living room or at your kitchen table with a doctor in your house, the nurses at your house, your family around you, understanding, you know, let's talk a little bit about how breakfast went, what was your weight today, how'd you sleep last night, any issues that came up. Let's talk about how we're going to kind of navigate the next day or two and adjust our medical plan around what you're doing at your house. It's a completely different experience.
Mandy, I'm going to ask you what sounds like maybe a cynical question, but this has to do with money and insurance, because one of the things that I think many of us are aware of from experiences with our own family is sometimes you can get the sense that insurance companies set limits on how long you can be in the hospital, also that hospitals want to make money and that different doctors are fighting over which patients get admitted. There's a limited number of beds. Is any of the impetus behind the hospital at home program coming from a desire to handle more patients, bring in more income, and kind of get around some insurance issues?
I think the history of the hospital at home care model, as I would call it, in the U.S., as I mentioned, started in the 1990s, but really came to a head with the pandemic. And part of that was hospital systems being completely overwhelmed with the amount of people that needed to be hospitalized. And so our leaders, our federal leaders, looked at some of the research that had been done by programs like the ones I mentioned and decided that that they should put a little bit more time and effort into figuring out if that would be a good additional site, not a replacement, but an additional site of care for patients. And so through that work and throughout the pandemic and the public health emergency, many programs were able to be built to offload some of that incredible overwhelming capacity at the hospitals. I think to your question, our health systems now that we are sort of post the throes of pandemic, I won't say gone, we still have so much need in our hospitals and not enough beds. Our health system CEO refers to the wicked problem of access, meaning that we just don't have enough capacity for everyone who needs care. So this type of model allows patients who are willing, want to participate in their care at home, which is incredibly important. This is 100% voluntary and would benefit from that home environment. That takes them out of the buildings so that the people who are waiting for a bed, you mentioned, sitting mm-hmm. in an ER for hours and hours. That's the reality of many health systems right now. So I would say that this model of care helps to create more access for the folks who need to be in that brick and mortar hospital building by offering care outside of the home. There's still not enough access, even with that.
But isn't it also true that if you choose the hospital at home program, that's going to cost your insurance company less than if you, let's say you're in the hospital at home care program for an additional 3 days after discharge from the brick and mortar hospital. Those 3 days, wouldn't that cost the insurance company or the hospital less?
So in order to qualify for the hospital at home program, you need to continue to meet the exact same insurance criteria as the folks who are in a bed in the hospital. So it's still acute care, and many payers pay that as a bundled payment. So whether that patient is in the bed in the hospital itself or receiving that same inpatient care at home, it's all part of one episode. So it's doesn't really have an impact actually on insurers of whether the patients are in the building or at home. They're still receiving that acute care, and it's all part of one bundle payment.
And what made you decide to kind of become medical director of it? Mm. Besides, you'd seen this collateral damage in the hospital, seen that things sometimes got worse.
Yeah.
But it sounds, in a certain way, scary to start a program where you are sending doctors and nurses out to people's home and you're releasing them from the hospital while still calling them hospitalized.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the maybe trepidations you might have had?
Absolutely.
Or some of the, I guess, the legwork you had to do to get it set up as to who would qualify, how you would sort of make sure that people didn't get released from the hospital, go home, and crash?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think to start, I had a deep interest in how we could take care of people in a more holistic, better way. I saw that in the patients I took care of, my family members when they're hospitalized, what would I want for them? To be surrounded by your family, sleeping in your own bed with your pets, eating your own food, drinking your own coffee rather than the hospital coffee, all of those things. But, you know, the really wonderful thing about launching our program at the University of Wisconsin is that, unlike some other programs where they maybe had to launch their program in the throes of COVID and just make it work, we had years of planning. So before COVID, this was sort of a pilot program in a couple of places. And then during COVID, when Medicare sort of opened the floodgates by saying we're going to allow hospitals to basically bill for inpatient care outside the walls of the hospital, the floodgates opened, and then programs around the country started to develop. With that, then we started to see a lot of data come out about outcomes. So we could already tell in the programs that we're looking at that we want to model our program after, they have lower rates of patients needing to be readmitted to the hospital within 30 days. They have lower rates of functional decline or requiring a nursing home after discharge. They have lower rates of hospital-acquired infections, blood clots, all of the things we've sort of been talking about. And meanwhile, the outcomes were really good. Patient satisfaction was fantastic. We measure something called escalation. So when somebody moves into our program, at what percentage do we have to move them back to the brick and mortar hospital because something isn't going quite right? And the escalation rates are pretty darn low. So I agree, it's scary. It's a scary thing to take on. And I think where we launched, we started very conservatively. And then as things evolve and change, we learn what's our capacity, what can we do in the home? And some of that has to do with the logistics or maybe the technology and remote patient monitoring and the things that we can offer. But we started very conservatively and then have had wonderful outcomes since launch in summer of 2023. So why did I say yes?
Mm-hmm.
I was deeply curious about it. I saw patients and reflected on my own family and what I would want for them. And it's worked in other places. It's uniquely challenging. But I agree. It's a scary new thing to try.
We're going to talk about some actual patients and what happens as they move from the hospital into a hospital at home program and how they qualify, what some of the challenges and successes are when we continue in a moment with University of the Year.
In hospitals, they've got infections. Boom, ghost never rules without a beat. The food is tasteless as cardboard. Isn't Gavin home a better deed? But don't you feel sweet hospital at home? About the care I listen to. Sweet hospital at home. Makes me feel almost brand new. The great healthcare I'm coming on.
Sweet hospital at home, where the care is so true. Sweet hospital at home makes me feel almost brand new. Song set to the tune of Sweet Home Alabama. What if you could continue getting treated like you were still in the hospital, but at home? I'm Emily Auerbach, back with our two guests, Manny McGowan and Joshua Shapiro. And we are talking about UW Health's Hospital at Home program. Mandy, tell us something about eligibility and finances and insurance and how you set up the framework for this pilot program, which started, I think you said, in August 2023 out of Madison. Mm-hmm. You know, who can take advantage of this? Who pays for it? Who refuses to pay for it? Those kind of things. And then Josh will turn to sort of more the medical examples of the type of patients.
The way that the structure has been put forth for a program like this is really dictated primarily by Medicare and all of the experts that contribute to Medicare's recommendations for care. So for this particular program, they set a few restrictions or guidelines. Patients have to be adult, so 18 or over. They need to live within a certain distance from the hospital, which is 30 minutes. And that's been a really interesting piece of the puzzle because they say 30 minutes, not 30 miles. So when we talk to programs in Boston, their range is 5 or 6 miles. You talk about places that are not as congested, they can take patients up to 30 miles or so. So for our program, we are primarily within the greater Madison area and all within Dane County. Patients need to meet inpatient criteria. So that means that they need to be evaluated at the hospital, at the brick and mortar hospital in an ER. They need to go through the exact same clinical review and assessment that every other patient does. And once it's determined that they need to be admitted to the hospital as an inpatient, that is when they then qualify for our hospital at home program. And I think this model of care, because of the work that's been done by the researchers starting in the 1990s and forward, it is an incredibly collaborative group of physicians and professionals that are coming together to crowdsource information, share best practices, talk about what's working and what isn't. While we have these guidelines for Medicare, it does not specify exactly how you do this. So each health system really needs to think about what resources they have, what are they trying to achieve, who are the patients that for their health system would really benefit most. So for us, it's 18 and older, within 30 minutes, they need to meet that inpatient criteria. Other than that, we didn't want to limit our patient population. We don't want to say it's only people that have a certain diagnosis. Rather, it's important for us as a clinical care team to determine, can we take care of this patient at home safely?
You know, sometimes it can feel, if you show up at an ER yourself or with a family member, you could be bleeding profusely, and the first thing you'll be asked is about your what insurance do you have? Mm-hmm. You know, and it, so are you saying that one of the criteria is not, you know, are you covered by Quartz or Blue Cross or this or that? Or is that a factor, that insurance you have?
I would love to say no. Mm-hmm. No, that is a factor. So because Medicare covers it, many other insurance companies are also covering it as well. So that's the good news on that.
And
that,
can you remind listeners of the difference between Medicare and Medicaid? Because they're so often linked together. Mm-hmm. So if Medicare covers it, but Medicaid does not, what does that translate into in terms of the kinds of patients?
So Medicare is typically for folks who are 65 and older and have chosen both kind of Medicare A and Medicare B coverage. There are many people who are choosing to use a Medicare Advantage plan instead of their traditional Medicare, but the criteria is very similar. So 65 and older versus Medicaid. So Medicaid is, again, at the state level, and that is for people who are not covered by other insurance and meet certain criteria at any age, does not have to be 65 and older, and is income and access-based as well.
So that the group that can take advantage of this program right now does not include those who have no insurance or are lower income, and so that excludes them from this group at this time?
Under the state Medicaid plan, it is not covered. UW Health, we partnered with our leaders to include folks who don't have insurance and who go through the UW Health Financial Assistance Program. And we are able to include patients who qualify for that financial assistance program in our hospital home coverage. So we really try to determine what we had control over versus what we didn't, and expand our coverage as best we could within UW Health. So we are able to include patients who do not have insurance currently.
Great. So let's turn to the medical side of things. What kind of patient would you say would be the most typical in terms of the type of illness that would lead them to benefit from the hospital at home program? Or give us some kind of overview of the sorts of illnesses that you've worked with patients and how many patients we're talking about per month.
Yeah, okay. So we take, as Mandy was alluding to, we take patients who present to an ER here, either University Hospital ER or the ER over at UW's East Madison Hospital, and need to be admitted to a hospital. Now, we can take them directly from the ER after the ER doc has decided that they need to be admitted, or, which is actually the more common situation right now, is that somebody maybe gets admitted to one of our physical brick-and-mortar hospitals. Maybe they get stabilized over the first 24 hours. Maybe they get a consultation with a subspecialist, or maybe a CT scan or MRI or another procedure that they need. And they have a care plan that's developed and requires still maybe a couple more days of hospital-level care. We can transfer them out of the physical brick-and-mortar hospital into our program to finish their acute care, where they're still a hospital patient of UW. They're an inpatient of UW, but we're basically changing the hospital room from our brick-and-mortar hospital to their house. Right now, the majority of our patients are coming from that latter, so 80%+ are coming from that group rather than directly from the ER, but we certainly take both. Most commonly right now, we're taking care of things, you know, for instance, infections that somebody might come in with, a skin infection that's not getting better on oral antibiotics, a pneumonia, or maybe, you know, urinary tract infection that gets bad enough where somebody needs IV antibiotics and lab monitoring and things like that, and sometimes blood culture monitoring or things like that for a couple of days. We also take many patients, and maybe this is our second biggest bucket, folks who have had an exacerbation of a chronic disease that's not being managed as well as we'd like it to be managed. So congestive heart failure, COPD. These are folks who have lung conditions that make it such that at baseline they might not be breathing as well as they should. But there are certain things that can cause an exacerbation. Right. So maybe an environmental trigger, or maybe a seasonal trigger, or maybe just a medication change, or potentially they just weren't able to actually get their medications that they've been prescribed, might land them in the hospital. And some of these patients, the congestive heart failure, COPD patients, unfortunately, sometimes spend a good amount of time in the hospital. They might spend a week in the hospital getting something optimized, be discharged, and unfortunately might get readmitted again, and maybe sometimes multiple times in a year. So that's a group that I think we have an especially important task for, and I think are especially well set up to sort of change the trajectory of their illness, where we meet them in their homes, understand the the life they're living, their real world reality, meet them there, and then start to understand how can we tailor their medical care to support their reality, rather than doing it all in a highly controlled environment and then discharging back to their reality.
So let's take a specific case of congestive heart failure.
Okay.
And you know, I'm back in the hospital. It's my fifth time, and I'm having heart failure. If I picture going home and getting care, how do I get that kind of monitoring? You know how, like, you know, you have a call button for a nurse, and you're hooked up, and it tells you your heart rate and blood pressure and everything. Mm-hmm. It seems one of the biggest gaps would be to go from a situation where you're 24/7 monitored and someone's on call, and if your heart starts failing, there's someone there to catch it before you die.
Yeah.
How do you go home and be safe?
I hear you. So I think the question I would also ask is, what are the things that we're adding that are adding value or safety, whether you're in the hospital, in a brick and mortar hospital, or at home? So we take people when our healthcare providers make a judgment that we think it's safe. Two, if anything doesn't look the way we want it to look when somebody's at home in our program, they're still an inpatient of UW Hospital. We can move them back to the brick and mortar hospital. But the question of is, how do we make this safe for somebody at home who's still requiring ongoing hospital level treatment for their congestive heart failure? Typically what it's going to look like is daily lab checks to make sure they're, you know, as we adjust their medications or maybe continue to give IV diuretics or things like that to help their congestive heart failure, that their kidneys are tolerating it well and that, you know, that we aren't running into electrolyte problems.
So when you say daily labs, you mean somebody, a nurse or a phlebotomist or something, is going to come into the home and draw blood.
Absolutely.
And then transport that to a lab.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have a phlebotomist who will come in. And by the way, patients will see this whole agenda on, they each get an iPad, and it has an agenda of who's coming to my house and when. It's got a picture of them. It says what they're doing, a little bio about them. So our phlebotomist, they'll see that he's coming in at 8 a.m. and he's going to draw blood work, and he's going to get that back to the brick and mortar hospital. We're going to run that blood work. Our nurse will then come in. A physician like myself will come in. We'll do all the vital sign checks. We will, I'll examine the patient like I would in the brick and mortar hospital, and we'll decide on plan of care that day.
In some ways, it's like a throwback to an era where there were house calls.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know, where the doctor would come to the house.
And I'll be honest with you, as a physician, I'm relying a little bit more on my physical exam, some of the, you know, my just spending more time with the patient to really understand, like, you know, let's dig a little deeper so I can understand really how have things been going. Where are we at now compared to where we were at maybe yesterday or a week ago? I spend more time, and I think it's inherent that we're in a less controlled environment. So it's sort of necessary sometimes, I think, to rely more on those kind of what we would think in medicine, maybe some of the old school skills, like the physical exam stuff.
And looking at the living environment that somebody's in, I assume.
Yeah. So one of the things that's really valuable when I'm rounding on people in their homes is that they can tell me how they're feeling in comparison to some of their routine that they've done millions of times. Right. So like if they every day wake up and they walk to the kitchen and they prepare whatever their breakfast is, versus when I'm in the hospital, I may be rounding early, they haven't slept real well, they're kind of looking at me through sleepy eyes and I'm wondering how they're doing, and they're in a different environment, and maybe I'm going to ask them to go walk down the ward hall of the hospital and see how that feels, compared to just somebody telling me, look, I've walked to this kitchen 1,000 times and I prepared my toast this way 1,000 times. This is how I feel today compared to yesterday or the day before. I get a lot more valuable information that way. So in some instances, I think it actually helps me tailor their care a lot better to see them in their native environment than asking them to do something that's completely foreign to them in the brick and mortar hospital.
What if you go into the home and you see all kinds of, you know, cloud of cigarette smoke and, unhealthy things here and there? And, is it a problem in terms of almost an intrusiveness? Like, I've come into your home, you're being treated for this, and I see you've got all these problems around you that are going to make your disease worse. Is it a bit of a balancing act in terms of their privacy versus your needing to give them really good advice?
So I would advocate that, you know, we meet each person where they're at. And our whole team comes with varying skill sets, varying experiences. I come from an experience of taking care of a lot of people in the hospital. Some of our nurses are from home care. Some of our nurses are from inpatient units. We have a social worker. We have a whole team. We have physical therapists, occupational therapists, all sorts of people who can come to that with maybe a different experience or angle. And I think the experience, or maybe that example that you alluded to, is where we can maybe make the most difference. Now, I don't expect that we're going to walk in and change everything, right? We're meeting somebody in the world they live in and trying to use the skill set we have and the experiences we have to try to make a difference and make things better, and hopefully understand too, what are the things that they're looking for? What's important to them? Is it important that, you know, they get out and use that boat that's been sitting in the driveway all summer that they haven't felt good enough to use, or, you know, get down on the ground and play with their grandchildren and be able to move around their house? Like, these are the things that I help, you know, our team gets to understand when somebody's in their home. Mm-hmm. I don't get to understand it nearly as well when I'm talking to them in the hospital.
I'm kind of amazed that you have the time to do that within this program, because sometimes if you see a doctor in a clinic or if you're in a hospital, you have a sense that they have maybe 10 minutes and then they're on to the next room or the next patient. Sure. You know how they have those signs outside the clinics that say, it's almost like a flight where it'll say behind, running behind or on time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and they've got to enter the electronic notes and move on to the next one. It sounds kind of amazing to me that you would be at home, and then a doctor, nurse, physical therapist, occupational therapist, phlebotomist are all coming to you. That's a lot of driving on the part of hospital staff.
Yeah.
And a lot of time where you're not then seeing 20 patients that day. It's almost slow motion care. Mandy, how are you able, from the standpoint of administering it, to kind of allow for that time on the part of the doctors and nurses and therapists involved in the program?
Mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of experience doing that type of care with models like hospice and kind of traditional home health. And with this program especially, there are so many logistics. It's incredible. So again, we have to bring lab draws into the home. We need to bring coordinating with a third-party company to bring an x-ray machine in. The meals are delivered from another third-party company. And then all of those staff you're talking about.
So the meals, as if you were in the hospital, come into the home?
We offer, if patients would like, that we do provide 3 meals per day from a company that brings that delivery right to their home, which is great. So thinking about all those different little pieces, we have to coordinate all of that and bring it from different sources into the patient's home. So we have staff members that are specifically assigned to do coordination, unlike the brick and mortar hospital. So we have nurses and other support staff who spend their days kind of air traffic controlling all of the different elements that come into the home. And it takes a lot of work. And it takes time to drive from one place to another. I think that it is obvious from the outcomes, the quality outcomes, the patient experience outcomes, that being able to see 4 or 5 or 6 patients in a day versus 20, it's a fantastic return on investment.
We're going to look at what are the outcomes and what is the future when we continue in a moment on University of the Air.
I know you will miss your home. Don't worry, cause you're not alone. There's other children just like you, and family will visit too. You can even bring your Ted to cuddle in the hospital bed. And when the nurse says it's okay, there'll even be some time to play. If doctors say you have to stay, every
hospital at home. What if you need to continue hospitalization, but you could go home? I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Mandy McGowan and Joshua Shapiro as we talk about UW Health's Hospital at Home program. Mandy, you mentioned that to be eligible for the program here in Madison, you need to be 18. But I think all of us have thought about how hard it is for children to be in a hospital setting. You know, they're even more than the adults. They want their own bed and their stuffed animals, and it's scary to be in a different place. Is this a program that is being done with children elsewhere and could be done here in Madison?
Yes. There are a few programs across the country that are extending this care to pediatric patients, and it is of great interest both nationally and here at UW-Health to at some point be able to expand to the pediatric population for all the reasons that you mentioned. We're not there yet, but there are many populations that we're looking to extend to, both adult and pediatric.
Great. And back to the sort of hospital at home program running right now, let's say with somebody with congestive failure, or you had mentioned earlier that it might be an infection that just won't go away, where they need the IV antibiotics, that the oral antibiotics aren't enough. How do you then, if you're in a home environment, keep things sterile enough? And, you know, if I think of all the equipment that is in a hospital, how do you get that kind of level of care in someone's home?
Yeah, so we use some smaller versions of some of the same equipment that is being used in the hospital. So we have an IV pump that's a little bit smaller and more portable than the IV pole that's in the hospital. We make sure that we have, of course, a one or two well-placed IVs. If we think that somebody might need ongoing, say, prolonged infusion, sometimes they might get a little bit more of a substantial IV, kind of similar to if somebody were getting home infusions or something. But, you know, every day our nurses are in the home at least twice, and they're doing all the typical cares that the nurses would be doing in the brick and mortar hospital. So the IV site care, skin assessments, making sure that the medications are you know, kept in appropriate fashion. And so the nurses are the ones administering the medications. You know, we're doing it in a very, very similar way to what we would do in the brick and mortar hospital. So if somebody needs an IV infusion of an antibiotic or another medication, our nurses are doing it in the same sterile way that somebody would do in the brick and mortar hospital. We've taken many of the things that we know we do very, very well in the brick and mortar hospital and mirrored it exactly at home.
And I would say, and yet we've also simplified things. I think it's really important that when you're in the home, you are the care team is tailoring directly to what the patient needs. So some of that equipment, some of that big stuff isn't really necessary.
Well, what about oxygen?
Yes. Yeah. So oxygen is very portable. We have a partnership with a home medical equipment company that brings oxygen in as well. I think, you know, Dr. Shapiro talked a bit about the physical assessment skills. It really does kind of go back to those basic skills of what does the patient really need in the home, and what can we bring to them? I think, you know, your question about risk of infection in the home, their risk of infection is far less than if they were in the brick and mortar building. So while all of our processes are very patient safety oriented and things are done prescriptively, the risk for the patient is far less in their home in the first place, which is really exciting, actually. And I think we talked a bit about mobility and how oftentimes when a patient's in the brick and mortar, they lose some of that muscle mass, they lose some of that mobility. When they're in their home, what we've heard from patients and caregivers is they're not having to recover from their hospitalization.
And they're probably going back to what they normally do in their house rather than just feeling like a patient.
Exactly.
And it sounds like more mobile, hooked up to a bunch of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you alluded to how busy it sounds with physical therapists, phlebotomists, doctors, nurses. I mean, a lot of times we'll see our patients, they're coming to the front door to answer the door maybe six or seven times as there's visitors, and they're making their breakfast, and they're talking with their families, and they're moving around their house like they normally would. That's a stark contrast to what they would be doing in the hospital. And I think we also see that folks just really ally with our care team to a much deeper extent. So they really partner with us. So sometimes when I walk in, you know, we have equipment to check vital signs, of course, right? Blood pressure, cuff, a scale,
temperature, those things, a pulse oximeter to measure how well somebody's breathing. We collect their vitals and upload it to the health record the same way we would in the brick and mortar. But I'll encourage the patient, weigh yourself if you'd like. Check your own blood pressure if you'd like. And I'll walk in and somebody's already done it. They'll say, hey, doc, today, you know, my weight was this, and here's how I slept, and notice my blood pressure is doing this today.
So they're a partner in the sort of data gathering, which is probably a good transition to when the program starts. Now, you had mentioned that patients are given, I think, like an iPad, and it tells them what's happening. Let's say I'm 85 and I have some dementia, and I really can't cope with all this. Then am I not eligible for the program? I mean, I would think it would be overwhelming to someone where the cognition is maybe not there.
If somebody has cognitive deficits that don't allow them to sort of ally and partner in their care plan, in that instance, we would love to do anything we can to take care of them, but we would also need family members or friends or somebody to help support them throughout the experience. And so if somebody can't, say, do their typical activities of daily living, like dressing themselves, eating, managing their medications, that sort of thing, we would need to have a friend or family who's there, who's going to ally with us to partner in their care.
Sure, that makes sense. So what are the results? You know, I've been doing this for a while now. What are you seeing in terms of how patients feel about it, the results in terms of the numbers who are doing better than had they stayed in the hospital, and, you know, also challenges maybe that are there?
We launched our program in July of 2023, and since that time, we've taken care of about 150 patients at home in our hospital at home program. Through that, we've been able to free up some beds in the hospital, the brick and mortar hospital, close to 500 now, which has been great. And patients love it. Our satisfaction scores have been incredibly high, and I think even more importantly, the specific comments that our patients and caregivers are making have helped inform the care going forward. We hear things like, I slept so much better, I moved around, I felt like a partner, things like that, and so that really has informed the experience. As far as quality kind of outcomes, we talked a bit earlier about how patients sometimes bounce back to the hospital, and that's something that we track really closely. We want, when we discharge a patient from the hospital, we want them to be able to stay home. So we measure that closely in what's called a 30-day rehospitalization rate, and our health system does very well with that number, and our program, specifically our home-based hospital care program, has rates that are about half of even what our brick-and-mortar hospital has for readmission rates.
That's pretty amazing. What have you seen on the medical side, and what surprised you, too?
Yeah, I think the patient experience is hard to, I think, understate. Folks, when I'm talking with them and their family, they're almost always well-slept, energetic about the care plan, understanding how we can continue to make adjustments to optimize things so that they continue to feel better. They're feeling stronger as their hospitalization goes on, which I know it sounds simple, but that is different than what I see when I'm taking care of people in the brick and mortar hospital. Surprises, you know, I think one thing we've paid close attention to, and I'd like to continue to pay close attention to, is the caregiver experience, or the experience of, you know, patient spouses and their families. And I think, you know, we've heard some of the things that I expected to hear, but some of the things that I didn't expect to hear. So, for instance, you know, when we're in somebody's home talking to them about their care plan, we've heard how valuable it is to caregivers and families and spouses to hear the whole conversation and be present and be able to add their input, or, you know, ally with the care team about the plan for the day. Whereas when I'm rounding in the hospital, it can be challenging to catch a family member.
Mm-hmm. Or during COVID, where you can't even be there.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's also hard to understate. Families have just felt sometimes just like they can't believe that the patient and them are sort of at the center of attention of with this whole care team right now. Still, it's a logistically challenging thing. patients and caretakers have multiple people visiting their homes every day. We try our absolute best to keep to a schedule and let them know here's who's coming. But once in a while, we have to pivot and things change, right? These are acute patients. Things can change, and sometimes we might change a schedule. And yeah, I can imagine if you're a family member who wants to make sure that you're there for the second nurse visit of the day, and we have to change because something happened, that can be quite distressing. Like, oh gosh, the nurse said they're going to be here too, and now we're changing things. But overall, both patient and family experience has been incredible.
I would think you could almost get spoiled. I mean, you know, if in terms of people, some, you know, here comes meals and doctors and nurses, and like you said, you're the center of the healthcare team, and all to yourself, you don't have to feel somebody's rushing to the next room. So what about the transition from being in this program just being home but not in the program, sort of being discharged?
Yeah. When I discharge people from the physical brick-and-mortar hospital, they can't wait to get home. Mm-hmm. And when I discharge people from this program, it's a whole different conversation. They're already home. They're getting this intensive care from this whole care team. And so our job is to facilitate that transfer in and help navigate it with them by setting up the absolute best follow-up plan we can. And we are lucky that we have our own social worker. We have folks who work just on logistics. So working on making sure that they're very educated on their medication changes that we've made. You know, we've seen them adjust maybe their diet and their lifestyle throughout our program. So we've been working on that already. Plan moving forward. Maybe I've seen them checking their weights every day. We're going to continue that, or X, Y, and Z that, you know, they've been a partner and they're monitoring already. So maybe some of the transition is actually not quite as dramatic because they've already picked up on
the first transition.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we've been there through the big transition, the one from hospital to home. And we've been there and seen the things that crop up and the twists and turns and curveballs. And then they've allied with us to start maybe checking some of the things that we know we should be checking, whether it's their vital signs or their how they're breathing when they're sleeping or their, you know, swelling in their legs or something, or how their skin looks. And then we're working to set up the post-hospitalization care with that all in mind. We do call the patients after they've been discharged to check in. We have a nursing team who gives them a call typically about 2 days after to make sure, you know, do you have all the medications that we prescribe for the outpatient, and, you know, making sure the follow-ups are on the books and all of those things. So there's a lot that goes into these transitions. I'd like to think that some of the work we put in during that first transition hospital to home really pays off in the end.
It sounds like a program that you're both really proud of, and that where there's a lot of room for expansion. It'll be nice to take a look 5-10 years from now and see, you know, has there been enough funding and interest and support to make it continue, and not just to continue, but to grow beyond that 30-minute limit into other parts and other kinds of populations as well. Thank you for being here on University of the Air.
Thank you.
My guests have been Manny McGowan, Director of Home-Based Care Programs for UW Health, and Dr. Joshua Shapiro, Director of UW Health's Hospital at Home Program. I'm Emily Auerbach, hoping you'll join us for the next hour of University of the Year.